From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello, and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Jill Dittmeyer. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerup Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album. It's available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a sneak preview of the Phoenix Theater season.
I'll learn about an exhibit of Nelson Mandela's art on view in Indianapolis.
And I'll talk with the new director of the Butler Arts Center. We'll also have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indianapolis's Phoenix Theater begins its season this weekend with Peter and the Starcatcher, the musical prequel to the story of Peter Pan. Sharon Gamble invited Phoenix founder and producing director Brian Fonseca and the theater's director of development Eric Olson to tell us about the season theme of risk and reward, plus a new series of one-weekend-only performances called One Night Stands.
So normally I wouldn't have people in theater read from a brochure, but I love the sort of refreshed vision statement that you have in your brochure this year. So, Brian, I'm going to ask you and Eric to team up and read us that letter.
Okay. Well, we were looking for what's really happening, what's thematic for us, for the organization, and also just thinking a little bit more expansively. So it's called Nothing Ventured, Nothing Changed. We are a theater in transition. This will be our last full season in the lovely old church we've called home for 29 seasons. And in that time, we've produced 290 plays, watched young actors transition to adults, witnessed the transition of many beloved artists, board members, and patrons, our family, from this life to whatever awaits us on the other side.
We are a nation in transition. This is a time like no other I've experienced since becoming politically aware. I didn't think anything could be scarier than politics and events of the 60s and early 70s, but we are once again a nation on the edge. There's racial tensions, the wall, and we don't mean Pink Floyd, LGBTQ struggles for equality, Black Lives Matter, the assassination of police officers, climate change, pressure of global events, mass shootings, terrorist attacks, and even the Zika virus in Florida. These are just a few of the pressing issues confronting us.
And we're a people in transition. This is why we will continue to produce plays that illuminate and investigate these issues. We will share with you passionate people who fight for beliefs, struggle for insights, fall in and out of love, lose hope, find redemption, have children, deal with loss, and find inspiration. Essentially, we will bring you the human experience, warts and all. We believe in transition. After all, we are a phoenix.
Indeed, indeed. And reinventing yourselves all the time. It feels, Brian, that feels to me like something I've heard you say before, that it's, isn't that just a restate, not just, but a lovely restatement with current circumstances of something you didn't know 33 years ago, but what you hoped the theater might become?
Yes, I believe so. At some point, you know, as you mature, you become a little bit more aware of putting things together in a larger context. When you're young, you're just artists thinking about the next show. Then at some point, you find your mission, what your life is all about, and you start thinking more from a community perspective and more what you can do to make the community stronger, more enlightened. And we've discovered that that's what we do with our programming. We might have done it from the very beginning without awareness of mm-hmm. that's what we mm-hmm. were doing. But now we are so much more aware, and it just keeps us that much more focused.
Yeah, yeah. And this risk and reward season, man, resonates on so many levels. I mean, you've always taken theatrical risks. artistic risks, mm-hmm. and you're about to make a big change in about a year.
Yes, we are, and that's part of the big transition we're talking about. We are going through the silent phase of raising money in a capital campaign. You know, there's a formula that you're advised to follow, which is raise a certain amount before you go absolutely public. Mm-hmm. And we are so close. So in October, we're going to have a big press conference and announce to the world where we're moving to. And I didn't think, you know, when we moved into the church, I didn't think I'd be going through another transition. I thought I'd be leaving that church. That would be the end of my theatrical career.
Surprise.
But surprise, yeah. So I couldn't be more excited about the possibilities and the potential of a new building. And it's just giving us that much more excitement and that much more reason to be.
Sure. And Eric, you wear two hats. You're an artist slash actor, but you're also a fundraiser.
Yes.
And you seem very calm. Things are going well.
Well, that's where the acting comes in.
I see.
Yes. No, things are going great because, of course, we have truly the best audience, the best support system you could ask for in this community to keep the Phoenix going, doing the material we do for 33-plus years now. Says a lot, I think, about Indianapolis. And we couldn't be more thrilled to have the community behind us as we go through this change.
You're starting the season with a kind of a magical production that Brian, you got to see in New York. Tell us what you liked about Peter and the Starcatcher.
I absolutely love the theatricality of the production. It's storytelling on a very magical level. You get to use your imagination, and we get to go to exotic locations, and we have pirates, and we have the Lost Boys, and we have romance, and we have people learning very important lessons. And in it, now that I'm actually working on it, I'm finding things that I perhaps didn't catch in New York because of the size of the house and you're further back, but there are all these lovely messages about the environment, about politics,
really?
About globalization.
Whoa.
And there's this beautiful, exquisite language. There's some passages that the young heroine recites that just talks about the beauty of words and where she will fit with what she will do with her life. There's so much complexity and texture that when I saw it in New York, I was just looking at the spectacle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But as always with the Phoenix Theater, because we're small, then we get to like downsize it and
yeah.
start looking at what's really inside of it and finding the heart and the magic of it.
But what a tribute to the writing that it can be on that big canvas in a big house in New York, but also still speak or maybe speak more eloquently in your place.
I absolutely think so. I think that's the beauty of it. And we haven't lost any of the, you'll be surprised, any of the spectacle, even in our small space. But we get to, you know, it's huge. There's sword fights and pirates and hurricanes blowing in.
Oh, my gosh.
Magical islands and natives. And it's just one surprise after another.
And if people are like, whoa, is this based on Peter Pan? It is.
Well,
roughly.
It is, yes. It's the prequel, actually, to Peter Pan that
uh-huh.
tells you how these characters that we've known and loved for decades become the familiar figures we know. So it's that fantastic context that everyone can relate to that takes one step further to just be a very universal statement on becoming the person you choose to become, you know, assuming your role in life and setting your own destiny. And the fact that we will have what for us is a pretty rare opportunity to be telling that story while looking out and seeing parents with their kids, sharing that, bonding with the company. To use your word, I think it's going to be a magical opening for us.
Do you get to fly someone?
In a very theatrical way, yes. Not in that way that you think of. You put them in a harness and they lift up. Not in that Mary Martin, Peter Pan, I'm
sure.
flying kind of way, but in a new and different way.
Ooh, well, I'm not asking anymore.
Yes.
I want to be surprised. So it sounds like part of the, oh, I hate to say the M word because it sounds like seeing it will be good for you. Message.
Yes.
But it sounds like part of what we learn is that it's okay to be different from one another, right?
Absolutely. And it's also a message about how we grow up, what our responsibilities are, how we make that transition from not being aware to being aware, much like the conversation where we started with we were young artists not knowing what we were doing, and then we grew up and realized, oh, we're doing something very good and we should even sharpen the focus of it.
Mm. That thought about what is and isn't universal kind of carries over into the first of your so-called one-night stands.
Tell
us. Now, don't tune away. And if you have your children in your car, keep listening. It's not what you think. Tell us about one-night stands.
So opposite or on the other end of the spectrum to Peter and the Starcatcher is something that really does look at a very current and social and political issue, and a much more adult issue. And that is the issue of immigration, immigrants, young women in particular, finding themselves in compromised situations by rather nefarious people helping them cross borders.
Mm.
And it's something that is happening globally. This particular story is looking at people coming up from Mexico, which couldn't be more political, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some of the perils that they find themselves in. And we're going to be working with a number of other organizations that are trying to shed light on this issue. And as always, we just love to use theater as the way to open up a dialogue with folks.
This is, I'm surmising here that this is a project that is related to your receiving the Transformational Impact Fellowship and your work with Near West Side communities?
It absolutely is. And I just want to once again just give credit to the Indianapolis Arts Council, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and the Lilly Endowment, who are looking at how we make communities a little bit more vibrant by using the arts. And we're going to be co-producing this, the Phoenix Theater and the Transformational Impact grant from the Arts Council, bringing in a company from Portland, Oregon called the Milagro Theater. We've presented them at the Phoenix in the past.
Mm-hmm.
In their tours, it's a very educational program, and they're looking at very specific issues. And on the Near West Side, it's a growing Latino community. And even though we're going to be doing presentations throughout the next year looking at various cultures, we're doing this specific culture right now with this play.
And just one-night performance.
One-night performance. And I'll have to look down at the brochure to make sure that I can tell you exactly what night that is.
It's October 14th.
October 14th, that's right.
And so what led you and your team to come up with this small series of one-night performances?
I think that we're looking at trying to expand our reach and to get our programs out of just the limitations of the physical space of the Phoenix Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to take the theater to the community in a very new way, both physically and also by having these collaborations, I think, with other artists. It enables us at the Phoenix to stay true to our mission, but while injecting new energy, new voices into that message, which hopefully, makes people hear it in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
The last play in that season, Caught, mm-hmm. by Christopher Chen, we're going to be producing that up at the Indianapolis Arts Center. So we're trying to branch out, create little nests, if you will.
Oh, I love that concept.
In different areas of the city, and share our message and our way of communicating through the arts with these communities.
Sharon Gamble with Phoenix founder and producing director Brian Fonseca and the theater's director of development Eric Olson. The Phoenix's season begins this weekend with the musical prequel to the story of Peter Pan, Peter and the Starcatcher. The season comprises 13 productions, and it's the last season for the Phoenix in its current location just off Mass Ave. Learn a lot more at phoenixtheater.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. A one-of-a-kind collection of drawings by the late human rights activist Nelson Mandela is on display in downtown Indianapolis. The Long Sharp Gallery inside the Conrad Hotel is featuring Nelson Mandela, the artist. drawings and hand-signed lithographs by Mandela, along with photographs of the Nobel Peace Prize winner and his own reflections on his work, will be on display at the gallery till October 9th. Jill Dittmeyer spoke with the woman who brought the exhibit to Indiana.
Anna Hunter owns the Belgravia Gallery in London, where she and her daughter Laura Walford showcase art that raises money for charities.
I've been representing Prince Charles and his art since about 1988. And after that, I met the publisher of Nelson Mandela's work in 2002. And he asked if I'd be interested in handling Nelson Mandela's work as well. And I thought about it for about 5 minutes and thought it was a very good idea, and I wanted to know more about it.
She learned that Mandela had assembled a number of South African businessmen to come up with a creative way to raise money for local children with HIV and AIDS. The businessmen suggested that the man whose mission was to create peace try to create some art instead.
One of the people in the room thought about it for a while and saw John Lennon's drawings in a gallery, and he thought that if John Lennon couldn't do those and they could be sold for quite a lot, then if Nelson Mandela did some drawings, they would, I'm sure, be very successful, he thought. And so he approached Mr. Mandela, and Mr. Mandela said that he would love to have a go. He said, I don't know, I've got any talent, but if you let an art teacher help me at the beginning, then I'll go from there. And that's what he did.
Mandela's first creation was a series of pencil drawings.
Well, the first drawings that he did were related to the struggle against apartheid, but also the struggles in his life and in all our lives. And there are a series of drawings of hands. They're very simple, but they start with struggle, the clenched fist, and then imprisonment, two hands bound together. The third image is of hands breaking free from their shackles. And then the fourth is of two hands clenched together, called unity. And then the future is one big hand clasping a very little hand, and that's the future. And Mr. Mandela wrote about those pieces, saying that hands can be bound, but in time we were able to transcend all our difficulties, and the future's much brighter.
The collection was a success, so Hunter suggested another, and this time with a bit of color.
And Nelson Mandela took this on board, and he said, look, I'm best known for Robben Island. Why don't we go back to Robben Island? And I'll do some drawings based on that. And so he spent a few days with a photographer and the publisher going round the various sites on Robben Island. Photographs were taken of the prison, the ward, the courtyard, his cell, the lighthouse on Robben Island, the church, etc. And he did drawings back at his home in Johannesburg based on those photographs. Robben Island, having been there, is a very grim place. It's very grey, it's nothing like the colours that Mr. Mandela used when he was doing the drawings. And he said that he used these bright colours to show that he'd overcome the nastiness of and the ugliness of Robben Island. And he wanted to see Robben Island in a positive light, and that it actually enabled South Africa to be free in the way that it has become free.
The exhibit at the Longsharp Gallery in downtown Indianapolis is the first time the collection has been shown since Mr. Mandela's death, and the second time it has been exhibited in the United States.
We have a gallery in London, in Mayfair, and we have exhibited Nelson Mandela's work in various places around the world, including Australia, the Rockefeller Center in New York, the House of Lords in London, and other places, our gallery in London. And on Robben Island itself, in the presence of Nelson Mandela, when we hosted a dinner for him and various personages. The art was all on display there.
What was his reaction to the display?
He'd seen everything before, and he sort of nodded as he went past them. But I think art looks so much different when it's presented beautifully in a lovely frame and hung on walls and that. And I think he was very proud of it all.
What has been the reaction from other people who have seen the collection?
Well, they've been bought by a whole range of people around the world, including serious and well-known collectors, who feel absolutely inspired by Nelson Mandela and everything that he represents. We've also seen the reaction of people who were affected by Robben Island. One lady, we remember well, came in and saw the work of Nelson Mandela, and she said that my father was on Robben Island with Mr. Mandela, and she said that she was a child when he went into prison, and when he came out, he was a totally transformed man, a broken man, and he died within a year of coming out of prison. And she contrasted that with Mr. Mandela, who seemed to really relish life after the appalling hardship that he had to endure.
And I know part of the experience at the Long Sharp Gallery, and perhaps it's been this way at the other galleries, is that there's going to be seats and people are invited to come and look at the exhibit and then sit down and talk about it.
Exactly. And this is a remarkable thing that really Long Sharp Gallery have pioneered, the opportunity to use these works to inspire people for issues relating to peace in their own lives. And whether it's faith-based discussions or if it's race-based discussions or just a personal resolution of any conflicts, then this is a wonderful space to be in order to think of how a man had to go through such hardship as he did to come out the other end, such a beautiful person, and hope that something of those will rub off onto them.
And obviously you and your daughter, you've been around these pieces of works now for, what, almost a dozen years or so. Are you still learning and gleaning something new from them every time you share them with
yes,
others?
Yes, we are. I mean, we've had the great fortune to be involved with the Mandela family, in particular Nelson Mandela's eldest daughter from his first marriage. She has, I think, filled in lots of the gaps that we weren't able to talk to him about. We did talk to him about his work, but she said she spoke of the inspiration behind so much of her father's art coming from their tribal values as the Thembu tribe. She feels very strongly was the inspiration that gave him the ability to transcend the awful difficulties and to come out of the pain of being in prison for 27 years and being treated harshly in such a positive light.
The timing seems perfect as well for this exhibit to come back to the United States with obviously we have our own racial tensions going on and a very important presidential election.
No, it is a very good time for people to reflect this. And the fact also that it's in a downtown area in the center of Indianapolis, people can come easily and drop in. There's parking nearby. And there's just an opportunity to let this great man's artwork really speak to people and their own lives.
That was Jill Dittmeyer with Anna Hunter, whose collection of art by Nelson Mandela is on display at the Long Sharp Gallery in the Conrad Hotel in downtown Indianapolis through October 9th. Learn more at longsharpgallery.com. Hey, Jill.
Yes, Sharon.
Guess what arrives as our listeners are first hearing this edition of The Art of the Matter?
Santa?
No, some big box stores. I've
been seeing a lot of holiday decorations.
There were Christmas lights out in one. I'm blanking, and I'm probably happy that I'm blanking where that was. I mean, it feels a little
too early,
a little soon for Halloween even. But no, but you're on the right track because fall arrived this morning at 7:21. That's Thursday, September 22nd. It's officially fall. Yay!
Ready for the crunch of the leaves under our feet.
Absolutely. And those pumpkin spice lattes and some nice fall arts event on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
I said event. I meant events, obviously.
Plenty of events.
What do you have? Tell us something that's going on.
Well, going on right now and kind of in that theme of Halloween and fall over at Footlight Musicals, one of our favorite venues. It's the Addams Family.
Oh, the Addams
underway right now. 1847 North Alabama, great little theater venue. If you've never been there, you should check it out. It's civic theater, so amateurs, but you would never know it by the quality of productions they put on there. And the Addams Family, of course, is the father's worst nightmare. Young Wednesday Addams has fallen in love with a normal guy. Any other dad would be thrilled.
Don't you bring that all-American normal boy home. What is wrong with you?
Gomez says, no. So Michael Davis is Gomez. Kathleen Horrigan is Morticia. Ivy Bott is Wednesday Addams. Thursday through Sunday shows. Just a treat for the entire family.
You know that somebody out there in listener land is quietly humming to themselves right now. They're creepy and they're spooky. They're all together. Spooky. I'm missing a line. Oh, you're a good snapper. I'm going to bring you some dead roses with the flowers cut off.
Merci.
Okay, we're being a little too weird. I'm going to move along to, well, I'm staying with the theme of love. The Tube Factory Art Space is accepting donations or loans of, stay tuned, letters, photos, objects, and interviews from failed relationships. Maybe it's a lost love, a best friend, a boss, or a parent, or sibling, or whatever has ailed people emotionally. They're accepting mementos from estrangements through December 21st. If there's any identifying information participants don't want shared, items such as letters, identifying information can be sharpied over or cut out or otherwise obliterated. And people who are interested can email shouta@bigcar.org to set up donation or loan arrangements and interviews. And what this is for a project called the Museum of Estrangement. It's going to open this winter. At the close of the exhibit in the spring, items will either be returned or burned in a bonfire/cookout. And then they're going to do this every year. So look through your hope chest or your
if you haven't already burned them.
Or, yeah.
Contribute.
What it doesn't say is whether there will be, I don't know, some ritual poetry around this or maybe a nice glass of wine to say, so long, farewell, off the
throw wine
goodbye.
On it.
There
something
you go.
Is a goodbye.
And then light it on fire. The Museum of Estrangement. Find out more at bigcar.org. I personally like this. I have some items.
I think it's a fantastic idea. And the Tube Factory is a wonderful place.
It
down
is.
There on, it's called Cruft Street. Yeah. And you can see the street sign when you're driving down there. It's just around the side of Garfield Park. Beautiful area. If you haven't been to the Tube Factory yet, you need to go check out Big Car Collective's new space. And you can do that this Sunday, the 25th, at 7 o'clock. It's the Andy D. Electric Variety Show.
I get it. How cute.
Yeah. Now, Andy D. is a local rock and roll, fun time singer, musician, you name it. He's there with it. He is actually going to be our October Small Studios session.
I can't wait.
Featured musician, so you'll want to tune back into our website to see that then. But meet him and his wife, Victoria. They have been out on all kinds of adventures across the country, and they've put it all together, and they are presenting a show. And it's you will laugh. You will laugh and smile, and it will be a lot of fun. And you can get your first look at the Tube Factory, where you can also probably bring your estranged items with you
so
and drop them off while you're there.
Your lost love tokens
yeah,
and go see
they're having
Andy
a barbecue there, too, as well. So
I love it. Hey, speaking of parks, you mentioned Garfield Park. You might want to go early and take a stroll through Garfield Park, especially the Sunken Gardens, which were recently renewed and replenished. And there's a spectacular fountain display in Garfield Park as well. Also spectacular, last weekend I had the good luck to go to the Holiday Park Ruins rededication.
That's fantastic.
Amazing landscaping, a really big project. The landscaping realizes plans done by the late Eric Fulford, who was just a genius. And in front of the ruins is a splash park. So as long as even though it's officially fall now, as long as the warm weather holds out, be prepared to take your shoes off and splash around in that splash park. A lot of fun. That's at Holiday Park, the ruins, and you can go online and read all about the ruins, which are fascinating.
Well, since we're talking about parks and water, I'll give you my Jill's Thrill pick of the week here.
Ooh, I'm ready.
It's the River Run Revisited. It's the ballet, Butler dance professor Cynthia Pratt, the exquisite
choreographer is putting together 100 dancers from the Butler Ballet, and this is part of that whole Streamlines
project.
I know you guys have talked about it before on the Art of the Matter. Mary Miss was the New York artist that came and did the first public installation that you can see when you're driving along Fall Creek Boulevard in between Central and 38th Street. That was the first part of it. Then they had poetry writing classes along those areas too throughout the summer. They've put the poetry to music. Cynthia Pratt has put her dancers to dance, and they're going to present it on a Saturday night at 6 o'clock at the Brookside Park. And they're going to be on the north bank of the park. And it's, Brookside's just right off of 10th Street, Mass Avenue, that kind of area. 100 dancers, it's near the Oaks Academy. The Streamlines Project is all about blending science and art together with installation art, music, dance. And you're going to learn something, too. So this is going to be a beautiful interpretation of Indiana waterways, the River Run Revisited, this Saturday night, September 24th at 6 o'clock. Be there.
Be there or be sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the great thing about live arts events. You just have to be there. I have no connection between dance or water and my next item. I'm just going to turn a major corner here. You've heard about this elsewhere on this station. NPR Marketplace Morning Report's David Brancaccio is coming on Friday, September 30th between 6 and 7:30 to the Shortridge Magnet High School at 34th and Meridian Streets. This is a co-sponsorship between WFYI, the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library, and the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. It's a panel discussion about the future of our planet. And the panel includes Nanny Vonnegut, Terrian Barnes, Jason M. Kelly, Sam Van Aken, and Aman Brar. It's a free event. It's part of Banned Books Week at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library, although the event is not at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library. Again, it's at Shortridge High School, Shortridge Magnet School, I should say, on Friday, September 30th between 6 and 7:30, free and open to the public. Fascinating assortment of speakers talking about the future of our planet. Big topic.
And you can experience more of our local planet also this Saturday up in Converse, that cute little town just north of Indianapolis a bit. It's the American Plein Air Painters. They're gathering for the day, and they're going to be auctioning off their paintings and giving prizes. And they're collecting money and paintings because they want to make a permanent plein air painting exhibit there in the local high school where Indiana teachers can come and bring their students to see plein air painting. Especially those fourth graders. That's when you learn your Indiana history.
That's right, exactly.
You can go and support the plein air paint out in Converse, Indiana this Saturday.
Fantastic. Hey, speaking of children, there'll be all kinds of children returning with the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir to Carnegie Hall on Sunday, October 16th. I know that's a little ways away, but if you're traveling to New York City, you probably want to make your plans ahead of time. It's a Sunday afternoon concert at 2 o'clock. You've heard about it on a previous show here at the Art of the Matter, but the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir has not been at Carnegie Hall for far too long, and Eric Stark and Michael Davis and the singers are going out to perform all sorts of amazing music, including a commission piece that is going to come out on CD. More about that very, very soon. Don't forget that there is the Family Day Harvest Festival coming up on October 1st on the grounds of the Indianapolis Museum of Art. It's a family-friendly day at the IMA with face painting and pumpkin carving and all sorts of other groovy things like that, including tours of the beautiful gardens out there. And you know what? We have a little surprise for our listeners. Brett Wiskons, who is an Americana singer-songwriter, is the Small Studio Session featured artist this month.
For September.
And we are going to give you a little sneak peek of his work right now.
Brett says he's always had a head for business, but a desire to create music.
I wasn't that musically inclined. I mean, I was in a band when I was 16 and I was a singer, but, you know, I'd use that term very loosely and in quotes even. Because some people just have it, and I just wanted it. And I still want it more than I think a lot of other people. Want to, as you know, can get you pretty far in life. We start the show, lights hit, drum kit, sounds even better than a song on the radio. It can get the best of you. You let it
don't you know it's damn good work if you can get it?
So much so that after studying business in college and playing in a few bands, he reached out to musician Mark Bryant from Hootie and the Blowfish.
I looked to him as a kind of a mentor and somebody that he really did help me take another step. And I just figured I can do some stuff on my own, but I needed that push and somebody that had been there, done that, that could help me take a step.
That meant stepping away from a solo career and collaborating with others.
I'd much rather sound better and raise my game to these other great musicians than be trudging along, always playing solo and not really having a barometer to measure myself against, you know.
Running up and down the street, catching the leaves as they fall. Where the soles in asphalt meet, I never asked for this at all. And I don't really miss you until I think about you, and everything that is you comes pouring from the corner of my eye.
Bryant also encouraged Brett to tell a personal story with his music.
I didn't know what I was doing back in the day. Working with Mark, again, it kind of comes back with him. He helped me to not even try to write songs, but write stories, which I'm pretty decent at writing short stories, and then we would turn those into songs.
Including his latest single, Don't Be the One.
Don't be the one that got away. Please be the one who will always stay. I'm gonna love you till my dying day. Don't be the one that got away.
My wife and I had a little bit of an argument, if you will, about whatever it was. I don't even remember now. But one of those things where, you know, it's pretty real and personal, but I also kind of fictionalized it a little bit for the effect of, you know, if I did lose her, because the songs Don't Be the One That Got Away.
Writing his own songs and creating his own sound are very important.
More Americana. I really like the term Americana because it can kind of be, it's folky, rootsy, rocky, and even a little country, and that's fine.
And he has a new fan as well, his daughter Luca, even if her favorite song isn't one of his own.
Man, I tell you what, that Elmo, or not Elmo, but Barney, geez, I've sang that song to her going to bed, I love you, you love me. It's unbelievable how many times I've sang that, but it's got that nice cadence.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
Busting out of Plymouth like a pilgrim.
That's Brett Wiskons. He is our September small studio session musician. You can hear more of his performance and a conversation with him on our website, wfyi.org/small studio.
Fantastic. And don't forget, Andy D will be our October artist. And you just told us about a performance folks can go see. And don't forget, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, or join us again next week for that calendar week. What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Butler University has a world of artistic resources that it loves to share with the community around the beautiful Near Northside campus and beyond. The university recently added a new position, Executive Director of the Butler Arts Center. And after letting him get a little settled into that new job, Sharon Gamble invited Ty Sutton in to tell us about the Butler Arts Center and his plans.
So tell us about your life before coming to Butler. How did you get started down the path of becoming an arts administrator? Children don't know there is that field.
Sure. Well, I didn't know that either. you know, come, I was a child of the 70s, and it, you know, arts administration and the whole idea was, you know, it wasn't really there when I was going through my education. So I actually went to school as a political science major and thought that I would end up as a lawyer because I have a fairly rational mind, which I know in the arts isn't what everyone has. I'm very right brain, but I love that left brain part, and I love the creativity. And so, you know, I sort of fell into it, to be honest with you. I grew up just outside San Francisco in a small town called Danville, California. And then I went to school in Salt Lake City at the University of Utah. And I had some friends that were involved with student government, and they said, hey, we're putting on concerts, and this would be really fun. And I thought, oh, this would be fun. And we were going to put on a big festival, and everybody else, as college students do oftentimes, started to drop out. And I decided that I was, you know, I had a knack for this, and I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed finding artists and seeking out what people liked, and that led to a greater role. And I stuck with my schooling, and I did get a degree in political science, but I really knew that something in arts or entertainment or, you know, sort of something in that journey was what was for me. And at the same time, I met my future wife, who is a professional ballerina. Ah. And so that sort of took me down that road. Polly danced with lots of different companies and is now teaching a bit here in Indianapolis. So I've had a very interesting career. I ended up going to work for the Olympic Games, and I worked on several Olympic Games, including Salt Lake and Athens. And
what did you do for them?
I ran venues. Yeah. So I ran men's hockey for Salt Lake in 2002 and ran the arenas. And, you know, I started out with the programming, and I sort of came over into the venue management
all
aspect.
That, all those logistics and negotiations unions and
yes, it is to be part of something that big is just an amazing experience. And, you know, I have several good friends that continued that way, and they move every 2 years, and they alternate between Winter and Summer Olympics. And
wow.
They've tried to lure me back a couple times. Vancouver was interesting because it's Vancouver, but you know, I grew up singing. You know, I grew up in choir, and I sang with a bunch of boys' choruses in the San Francisco area. So I always loved the arts, but it was never what I saw myself as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people arrive, you know, into arts administration and curating from this, you know, being a performer. And I wasn't really one of those people. So I have a different experience where, for me, it was really about how do we engage audiences? How do we deliver events and experiences that people really are not only engaged in, but leave a lasting memory?
Mm-hmm.
And so in my career, I've actually focused on opening new performing arts centers. And so prior to coming to Indianapolis to, you know, really create a new performing arts center with all the venues at Butler, I opened a new building in West Texas called the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, which is a beautiful multi-theater venue. Prior to that, I was in Fort Collins, Colorado for 5 years, and we took an existing performing arts center that was in need of repair and basically shut down for a full season and rebuilt it into a new performing arts center that's a multi-theater and conference space. So it's really a true community center for the town of Fort Collins, which is a really booming area where it seems like every 5 years the population doubles, so there's a real need in the community. And so this is the fourth performing arts center I've run. Prior to that, I was back in the San Francisco Bay Area for a few years at a smaller performing arts center. So I really, after I did sports, you know, I was with the Olympics, and I went and I actually worked in NHL hockey and arenas for a couple years because it was interesting to me, but everything kept drawing me back to the arts and to, you know, creating these experiences for people. And so as I've had the chance to do that, you know, it's been enjoyable. It's been something I'm one of those people, I get to get up each day and say, you know, how do we make people's lives better and how do we enrich their experiences? So it's been fun to do something here in Indianapolis and with Butler that really takes some well-known buildings like Clues Memorial Hall and really refresh the branding and get people excited about what we're doing.
What are some of those skill sets that you need to either refresh a performing arts center or get one open from the ground up?
You know, I mean, for the most part, it's managing people. And it's managing, you know, I say that we live in such a new age because it used to be if someone, I mean, and I can take it in my own case, even if 15 years ago I went to a concert or a recital or a chamber event or even a large Broadway show, if I had a great experience, I might be able to tell 20 of my friends about that great experience. Mm-hmm. And I might, over drinks or coffee, you know, share that we had a great experience at a venue. At the same time, if we had a poor experience, it would be that same group of 20 people that we'd be telling about it. In our age of social media, I think people's responses are so immediate and wide-reaching, and they scale so quickly from, you know, from that point of entry, whether they're having a great or a poor experience, that I think a lot of what we have to do now is manage people's expectations and also be ready to immediately respond to those expectations because their response is immediate. You know, if somebody, if the line was long getting in, we have a perfect example here in Indianapolis very recently. You know, there was an arena and there was a Kanye West show.
Right.
And they couldn't get the doors open because they were still sound checking. So, you know, an hour passed, an hour and a half passed. Well, before you know it, you know, Stuck at Kanye West is trending nationally. You know, and I take that as an example because in the arts, you know, and I have a wide-ranging consideration of what I think of as the arts. I think of it as everyone's experience, background, and their thoughts of what is relevant is different. And so as an arts administrator, I think all those things need to be relevant to me. You know, if they're having a great experience, then hopefully they'll tell other people. But now they tell people instantly and they do it from their seat and they do it at intermission and they're tweeting and they're on their Facebook and they're on their social media. And so people that in the past we might not have thought of as influencers are now huge influencers in our community. So in opening a new center or taking on a new idea, I try to make sure that we're very nimble and able to quickly respond because that's the expectation that we're met with. But a lot of what I do is, you know, I manage people and I try and manage programming and I try to sort of collate everyone's experiences and try and find diverse audiences. And I think that's really what I don't want to say pride myself on. I don't think that's the right term, but it's really
what you aspire to.
Yeah, it's what I aspire to. And it's also what I believe in is that without diverse audiences, we will not succeed as you know, as arts presenters, or especially in my position. You know, if I was running a singular company, I had the chance to work with a repertory theater company in California, and I loved the experience. But our mission and our purpose was very singular. It was to provide theatrical experiences to our audience. In running an arts center and looking at diverse programming, it's more about how you're curating opportunities for different people with different points of view. And so I think we're trying to do that, and it's a real focus behind what the Arts Center is, that, you know, we want to bring diverse audiences to Butler and, you know, to have diverse types of experiences. And to me, the experience of going to see a comedian or going to see symphony or visual art or new works or experimental works are all as valid as one another. They're just for different audiences. And so we're really focusing on those diverse audiences.
Or for the same audience in different moods.
Exactly. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you might feel like, hey, Wednesday night, I want to see a solo cellist. And, you know, you might not be in the mood for that a week later. And so
exactly.
Having diverse programming, I think, gives different people different opportunities.
You know, for some of our listeners who are like, whoa, wait, did they build something else new at Butler? We should probably define
what
we mean by Butler Arts Center.
Absolutely. And I know that is a new concept to a lot of people. And really what excited me about the job was it was the inaugural executive director of the Butler Arts Center, which just didn't exist except for this idea on paper. And so, yes, so Clues Memorial Hall, I think a foundation of the city, you know, 50 plus year history, is still there and is still the anchor of what we're doing. But right next door, you know, 15 yards away, we have a beautiful theater that opened in late 2013, the Schrott Center for the Arts, that we have also integrated, as well as we have three smaller spaces, the Ideson Duckwell Recital Hall, and we have two studio theaters in Lilly Hall. And they're all, you know, they're all equally important spaces because of the types of programming we can do. And so moving forward, this is the first season, and we've just announced our season here in the last few weeks. It's a Butler Arts Presents season. We're incorporating different venues with different kind of programming. We have everything from singer-songwriters to bluegrass to opera, comedy. We have Capital Steps coming up on September 23rd, so we're going to take advantage of the season and do some political comedy, which it's not hard this year. They should be. I'm sure they have plenty of material.
Out of the mouths of babes.
And, you know, but and everything in between. So I think what it's about is finding the right types of artists and performances for the right spaces.
And you've got so Clues is 2,200 seats.
2,200 seats,
and then your smaller of the studio theaters is
99.
Flexible.
Yeah, they're pretty flexible. The smallest fixed seat space, the Idson Duckwell Recital Hall, which is a beautiful space. Most people in town have never been in.
With great acoustics,
which we love. In fact, we'll be announcing some performances in that space. Is 130 seats.
It's
flex
very
it a little
intimate.
Bit. It's
yeah.
very intimate. It's an old chapel on campus, and so having that was one of the things that really attracted me to the position. I came here from running a university-owned building that was new, one of the busiest buildings in the country for the type of venue. But what really attracted me, not only to Indianapolis but to Butler and to this idea of a true art center and not a standalone theater, but an art center that provided different opportunities, was we have fantastic venues. The Schrott Center for the Arts, I know a lot of people have not been in it. Even, at Butler, a lot of people are still, it's a new building. It is a fantastic space that is versatile.
And again, spectacular acoustics.
Yes. And so for me, Clues Hall is a great Roadhouse Broadway, larger, 2,200 seats. It's a big, big space. And volume-wise, it's a very large space because of the architecture. And so having these other spaces where we can do percussion or piano or different things that sort of fit the space and the mood, it was really exciting to me.
Sharon Gamble with Ty Sutton, the first ever executive director of the Butler Arts Center. The Butler Arts Center comprises Clues Memorial Hall, Howard Schrott Center for the Arts, Idson Duckwell Recital Hall, and two classroom studio performance spaces, all on Butler University's campus. Learn more at butler.edu/arts.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owls Studios at owlstudios.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll get a sneak preview of the Ronin Chamber Ensemble season.
Sharon will also learn about this fall's AIA Architects Home Tour.
And I'll learn about an art exhibit called Secret Doors, where all the art is hung at kids' eye level. And we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.